and Company, delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I just went down the rabbit hole, by the way, of that discussion we were talking about with Dion Phaneuf and apparently Jeffrey Lopal. Jeffrey Lopal, who I guess there was, you know, some guy, and the those people threatened to sue. Like, they legitimately threatened to sue. I can't even believe I'm saying this. They threatened to sue. They threatened to sue all TSN for airing that viral tweet. So I'm watching Get Up today. So again, the big news in Indianapolis overnight was that the Colts had decided to give Carson Wentz the foot surgery, out 5 to 12 weeks. Now today it's come out that Quentin Nelson is out, which makes it even bigger. But I was watching TV today and I had to stop. And I literally had to say, there's one guy on TV on ESPN, Dan Orlovsky. And this is not personal. I have no beef with Dan. We've interviewed Dan on the show before. He seems like a nice guy. There's nothing personal as far as Dan Orlovsky is concerned. This is all professional. And this is coming from somebody who realizes that there is, in fact, a public perception about themselves. Like, I'm not one to sit there and say that I don't know that people think, like, oh, Jared just gets on TV and Jared says, you know, all this crazy stuff. And I understand that people say that. Like, I know that I am not immune to criticism of people not liking me for my sports takes. But I would like to think that for the most part, like, I'm pretty measured. And I keep watching Dan Orlovsky. First of all, Orlovsky is different than your average hot taker. Like, say, Skip Bayless or Stephen A. or one of those guys, because he has the shield of I played the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't play it at a very high level. He was a backup quarterback. But that's not what I mean. Like, he's not Joe Montana.
Okay, fair.
He didn't play at a very high level. Nobody remembers him from when he played, but he played. So every time he goes on TV, it is, hey, I played so, which is normally fine. But his takes are never rooted in actual fact. It's always just, I believe this, so it must stand. So it's like Shannon Sharpe talking about basketball. Like, when Shannon Sharpe talks about football, Shannon Sharpe's in the Hall of Fame. When Shannon Sharpe talks about basketball, Shannon Sharpe, in my opinion, his opinion of basketball doesn't mean anything more than mine or yours, because of Shannon Sharpe talking about basketball. But Orlovsky, again, played the game. But his takes are just wild, and it is narrative pushing to the nth degree. So he goes on television last year and tells everybody that Carson Wentz is an elite quarterback, and that Carson Wentz should be a top five quarterback, and that Carson Wentz is great, and that Carson Wentz is the man, and then Carson Wentz is terrible, and then Carson Wentz gets benched. And so here was Dan spending an entire pandemic pushing the narrative that he's great, and he won't let it go. And even yesterday when Wentz got hurt, again, one of the knocks on Wentz is that he's always hurt. Yesterday on television, Dan's telling you, hey, Indy, Super Bowl if they have Carson Wentz. This Indy team is so great, because he's pushing his Wentz narrative. This Indy team is so great that the sky is the limit if he's healthy.
They are a division winner, playoff good football team, and potential Super Bowl team depending on how well Carson Wentz plays. They aren't that with those other guys. So if they believe he's somewhere around that five-week frame, you stay patient, stay committed to who you are identity-wise as a team, and trust and hope. There's some hope and luck tied to this,
yep,
that he gets back for as many games as possible.
Okay, so wait a minute. What's, they're a division-winning team? When's the last time they won the division? They're a Super Bowl contending team? When's the last time they contended for a Super Bowl? 2014, when they got to an AFC title game? And so I'm watching TV this morning, and every time I hear Orlovsky talk about Wentz, I feel like I'm listening to Skip Bayless talk about LeBron. You know, where Skip for years said LeBron will never win a championship. LeBron's won five, and I'm not a LeBron guy. Excuse me, LeBron's won four, and I'm not a LeBron guy. But I'm not going to sit there and tell you that LeBron's not an all-time great. LeBron James is an all-time great. Now, is he Michael Jordan? No. But Skip Bayless, I mean, every day hammers LeBron for everything. But it's fine, because that's his shtick. That's what he does. But that's not what former athletes who are analysts do. And so today, as we've talked about, it's a disaster in Indianapolis. I've been listening to Indy Sports Radio. It's a disaster in Indianapolis. And Dan Orlovsky, again, is telling everybody, it'll be fine. It'll be fine this morning on Get Up. Take a listen.
Now, I'm going to channel my inner Aaron Rodgers, okay? R-E-L-A-X. Everybody relax. Number one question. Do the Colts believe it's going to be closer to 5 weeks or 12 weeks? Shefty just told us they think it's going to be closer to 5 weeks. So if he might miss a couple games, right? That does not have a significant impact on their season. 17-game season, seven teams in the playoffs. Number two, what does Jacob Eason look like? Shefty referenced the fourth-round pick from last year. Because if we were looking at this football team in a blind resume, right? Jacob Eason is a young player from Washington. I'll tell you one thing, big arm. Big, powerful, strong arm that can push it downfield. Blind resume of this football team, Greeny. This is a football team that has a great defense. Why does that matter for a young quarterback? I don't have to go score 30 points to go win a game. It has a great offensive line. I don't have to play fast and potentially panic with the football. It has a very good run game. I could turn around and hand it off a little bit. Good skill position players, great coaching. If we were just looking at this blindly and Carson Wentz's name wasn't attached to it, we would go, this is a good place for a young quarterback to go play. And that's why you don't have to panic if Jacob Eason has to go play a couple games.
So he's sitting there saying, it's fine. It's fine. Hey, my team, Indy, they are great. It's fine. He then turns over to Mike Tannenbaum, Greenberg does, and Tannenbaum gives it a little bit of reality.
So Dan Orlovsky is saying to relax. If you were sitting where Chris Ballard is sitting right now, would you be relaxed?
No, I'm doing the exact opposite. And here's why, Greeny. I have literally looked around the world for the best experts in performance, and the number one factor in assessing the risk if a player is going to get hurt is their past history. And the reality is Carson Wentz has finished one season healthy as a quarterback where he started the season and ended the season. And therefore, based on those facts, Greeny, we can't relax. That's just the truth of it. We saw San Francisco do it. They had a fragile Jimmy Garoppolo. They traded up for Trey Lance. If I'm the Colts, I'm going to do everything within reason to make sure that over a 17-game marathon that I have somebody else there besides Jacob Eason.
So, I mean, it's just, it's absurd. And I don't have a problem with Dan Orlovsky being on television. I don't. But the next time that you want to sit there and use the, hey, you don't understand because I played, nah, Dan, you're Skip Bayless. You're Skip Bayless. That's what it is. It's Skip Bayless. And I, trust me, I understand, again, the irony of me pointing out that somebody disagreed or that somebody said something ridiculous and that the former general manager on the same show pointed out that it was ridiculous. I understand the irony in that. But again, I don't go to you guys and act like I played or that I know more than you because, hey, I played in the NFL for forever, so I know more. Trust me. It's all narrative pushing, and it drives me insane, and I don't know why it is with Orlovsky other than the fact that I think it's because he's trying to act like, you know, on one hand, I'm Jay Billis, but on the other hand, I'm Skip Bayless. And it's like, you can't do that. You can't be both. And that's what drives me insane.
And I think one thing that Dan Orlovsky said that just drives me crazy that nobody's taking it with a grain of salt. He says, Adam Schefter says that the Colts say that it'll be closer to 5 weeks than 12 weeks. Of course they're saying that.
Yeah.
Of course the Colts are going to say, oh, well, Carson Wentz should only be out for a week, maybe two, once the start of the season starts. Of course they're going to say that. And I think that after 5 weeks, their tune will change if/when Carson Wentz is not out on the field as their starting quarterback.
Well, it's like Colin Cowherd says a bunch of crazy stuff, too. And it's like, yeah, but like
a lot of people say a lot of crazy stuff.
Right. Like, who cares? Now, I don't know how much everybody believes, like as far as, like I know in political commentary that the people that get up there, I'm not sure they totally believe what they say. I know that there are people that have accused me of not believing what I say. I firmly 100% believe everything I say. I mean, like, you've been around me enough to know that, like, this is not a shtick. Jared looks at it and says, okay, how can I get people to react? I feel a certain way. I say it. You all get mad. Like, that's what happens. But boy, Orlovsky, man, he gets me. Like, he really grinds my gears. And I'm sure that, you know, that's exactly what he's supposed to do. That's why they put provocateurs on television, is to get people worked up. But, man, he says a bunch of dumb crap. And nobody ever sits there and it's like the people that are all in the set with him are not like, Dan, that's a bunch of dumb crap. But they're more so like, well, Dan played, so Dan must know. And I'm like, I mean, no, 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 no. And it just gets me every time. And this to a T, because he, I mean, I think he is, but if you're going to bet the Titans to win the AFC South, then Dan Orlovsky is good for you. Because Dan Orlovsky is probably in, you know, artificially keeping those Colts odds up. But I mean, it really, truly, I just can't. And I doubt that people care like this, like I care, like I'm worked up about it, but I just today, you know, everybody relax. It's going to be fine in Indy. It's going to be, they got Jacob Eason. Again, I
and Sam Ellinger.
So I was listening to Indy Sports Talk Radio last night, and the guy who was covering practice was saying that Sam Ellinger was consistently outperforming Jacob Eason and was talking about, you know, Eason gets the nod in these joint practices they're going to have with Carolina. But if he's not good in those, then he'd make the move and he'd put Ellinger in there. And I tweeted that out and somebody said, well, Eason's going up against a top five defense and Ellington's going up against a bunch of third stringers. And I thought to myself, well, you know what? DeShone Kizer still stinks. Like, DeShone Kizer's not going up against first team Titans defense and he still stinks. So, like, that should tell you if a guy stinks or doesn't stink. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, I look at this and I think to myself, man, and it just, it gets me. It gets me. Even Jeff Saturday. Ian, pull up the Jeff Saturday from yesterday. Jeff Saturday. I mean, this is, so here's Dan Orlovsky, who is going out of his way to sell all of us that his dream of Carson Wentz one day not being terrible still exists. And even Jeff Saturday, who played on the Colts and tells you that he played on the Colts, explains to you how much this hurts him on SportsCenter yesterday because he loves the Colts, but he knows the reality.
If you can listen closely, you'll hear my heart breaking, Sage. Mm. This hurts me. Oh, listen, you know I'm a Colts fan. Like, I don't hide it. I want them, I always want them to be successful. I'm always going to be a Colt, but this is pretty tough news. And again, I'm with Frank. You know, you hope that it's on the 5 weeks, but if it's a 12-week type injury, this really sets the Colts back. I mean, you think, honestly, in the first five weeks.
You look at that Jeff Saturday clip. It's basically like, hey, I love the Colts, and I'm always going to be a Colt, and go Colts, but we suck. Like, that's basically what he said. And that, yes, that's what I like. Being honest with your audience, that's what I like. That's all I ask. And with Orlovsky, again, if he wants to be Skip Bayless, be Skip Bayless. But don't pretend like you know more because you played. Because there's nothing about anything he ever says has anything to do with something he would have picked up when he played. That's all I'm saying.
To me, it just kind of feels like logic. I mean, and there is a possibility out there, and I don't think that this is a very plausible scenario, but it could be that Carson Wentz on the dot 5 weeks, he's ready to go week two, maybe week one. He looks better than he's ever looked. This surgery is exactly what he needed to be the quarterback that he always thought that he could become. Do I think that that's a possibility? Sure. I'm not going to write it off. Do I think that it is likely? No.
No, it's not likely. It's not likely because it's not going to happen. Oh, it's not going to happen. I mean, I still, listen to Indy Sports Talk Radio yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, there were two fill-in guys. And with fill-in guys, you usually get one of two things, which is either, you know, I'm the executive producer of the team's radio network who happens to be willing to host today while the main host is off, so let me do that. Or you get, you know, Johnny Hot Take, who's like, I know Bobby's not in today, but I'm letting it fly. So you never know what you're getting with fill-in takes, and I have to give these guys credit because they were neither. So they were actually like kind of measured and talking about it. But it was funny listening to them discuss how, you know, this is an unmitigated disaster for the Colts and this is so bad and there's nothing any can do. But, I mean, you know, Tennessee, they're not going to win this division. I mean, no way. I mean, Tennessee, no. There's much
questions
about Tennessee.
I'm
like, the Titans won the division last year. Like, the Titans won the division last year. And the one saving grace Indianapolis would have in a normal year is that, okay, well, they have the harder schedule than we do, which is true, except that the one big opponent the Titans add by winning, by being a first-place team, is they get Kansas City at home. Well, Indy gets Tampa Bay with the new 17th game. The 17th game screws the Colts because the Titans draw New Orleans at home. We don't think New Orleans is going to be any good. They get Tampa Bay. So, I mean, it's just crazy. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. I had to get that off my chest. Also, you know what else bothers me? Are like the Johnny Tough guys out there that when you say something about somebody on Twitter, will be like, hey, at least tag them. You know, at least tag them.
At me, though.
At them. And it's like, dude, you're going to search for your name anyways. Like, you're going to find it or whatever. But so I tagged Orlovsky in this tweet that I, you know, was going to discuss this because people were, you know, Johnny Tough Guying me about not tagging him this morning. But again, like, I don't have a problem with the guy that wants to get on there and spout off a bunch of hot takes and push a narrative. I don't have a problem with that. But that's Skip Bayless. I can't look at you like Troy Aikman if you're going to act like Skip Bayless. 615-737-1025. That's back on the table. The AFC South is on the table as well. We'll get to your reaction, Stillman and Company, right here on ESPN 1025 The Game. And the one thing that still just truly bothers me, I mean, just truly bothers me when it comes to all of this, as far as Indianapolis is concerned, that perhaps maybe even locally, they're maybe giving a little credit. Or maybe the right kind of credit. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, we're live from the Wholesaling Studio. Powered by RumbleOn.com right here on ESPN 1025. The game Sounds Baseball is on ESPN 94.9. Sounds six-game homestand starts tonight against the Toledo Mudhens, AAA affiliate of the Tigers. Pre-game with Jeff Hemm at 6:50. First pitch, 7:05. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Stillman and Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. Adam Finkin has reached out to me of The Athletic, says you should put something on the line if the Titans do not win the division. I don't think I should put anything on the line.
Yep.
No.
I think you do.
I think Mike Vrabel's job should be on the line if the Titans don't win the division, given how bad it is. So that is what is on the line.
I think if the Titans do not win the division, you have to dress up like a clown.
I will buy an Indianapolis Colts women's thong, and I will wear it and run down Broadway if the Colts beat the Titans in the division without Carson Wentz at quarterback.
Haven't you done that before?
I wore no pants. I had like a shirt that was covering and no pants, but like nobody was like really paying attention, which kind of defeated the purpose ultimately.
Mm, I'm sorry. You didn't have your day in the sun running down Broadway.
This could be something that perhaps could be. I mean, like, it's just not going to happen. It's just not going
to
happen.
Well, then if it does, I'm holding you to that. See, today, August 3rd, 3:24 p.m.
Here's
Central.
Where, and I'm not, and maybe I'll reconsider actually doing it. Like, maybe I'll say that I will, like, actually vehemently do it. But here's why. I don't think that it's not my responsibility for the Titans to win the AFC South. It's Mike Vrabel's responsibility for them to win
the AFC South.
And the way it works in local talk radio is it's you do something if you doubt your team. You don't do something if you support the team that you cover. You know what I mean?
Well, but still.
So, like, when Craig Carton said that the Jets weren't going to make it to the playoffs and then had to, like, that's because that's the team he covers. So you're putting down your local team. I'm putting down the other teams. And plus, it's like, again, everybody's on my side about this. So, no, to Adam Vingan, I've reconsidered. Now, if I was putting the Titans down, maybe we should come up with something for the Predators because I vehemently don't believe in them. So maybe we should come up with something for them that I would do if they don't. But again, this is supporting, or I shouldn't say supporting. This is belief in the hometown team, not dissing the hometown team.
But still, when you are that adamant about something, you've got to reap what you sow.
But you're just as adamant.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
So what are you gonna do? But so then you gotta do something too.
But it's more fun whenever you have to do it.
Right, but so then what would you have to do?
I'll wear an Indianapolis Colts t-shirt on the show.
That's juicy. That's just, wow. Text into the text line. There's one in particular I really want to get to.
Yes, one texter texts in the text line and says, on the Pat McAfee show, Frank Reich said that the surgery was to remove a piece of the bone, Carson Wentz, the piece of his bone that had been stuck in since high school. The procedure went as good as it could have. That makes the Wentz portion more promising to be closer to 5 weeks rather than Nelson's injury.
When did this bullcrap of this thing being a high school injury come out?
I heard that when all of this news broke yesterday, that has been a high school thing.
Frank Wright said that in his press conference.
Okay, because I was listening to Dan Dockich in Indianapolis today, and Dan was talking about how, you know, now Reich and Ballard are starting to play the victim because they're starting to say, hey, you know, this was a high school injury, and this was a – and wouldn't that come up on an MRI? Like, wouldn't that have come up? I mean, I talked to somebody today who was – considering drafting Carson Wentz when he came out of college and told me, oh, I've seen the sheet in reference to all of the medical issues one way or another. Like, if you're going to trade for Carson Wentz, wouldn't you put him through the most exhaustive physical and MRIs possible in order to get an idea of what you're dealing with, given his injury history, which clearly now apparently dates back to high school? But remember, he had the broken wrist at North Dakota State, and then he went into the draft, and then he had the ACL, and then he had the back, and then he had whatever it was last year. And I mean, like, so wouldn't you want that, like, the full evaluation before you trade for him? And if there was a lingering bone chunk that was an issue since high school, wouldn't you address it then? Like, wouldn't you know about it?
Wouldn't it be a lot easier to rehab it when you're 16, 17, 18 years old rather than when you're a starting quarterback in the NFL?
Well, wouldn't somebody at some point in the NFL say, maybe we need to get that fixed?
Yeah.
So that's one thing. The second thing that I guess I go back to is why, and I don't understand this, why does Frank Reich feel the need to be glass half full with these injuries? You know, like when it comes to Vrabel, in an injury, Vrabel's just not going to talk about it. So let's say Henry's out, and we see Derrick Henry take a fall, and we hear that Derrick Henry's going to have surgery. He's not going to give us a timetable on when Derrick Henry's going to come back. He's not going to update us consistently where Derrick Henry is. He's just not going to talk about it. And we're going to ask, but he's not going to talk about it. It's just literally going to be like let's see, we're worried about the guys who are out here. You know, that's kind of the way we're... When it goes to Nelson and specifically Wentz, Reich is out there like on the defensive about how this isn't that big of a deal when it is clearly a humongous deal. And I'm thinking to myself, who's he trying to protect? It's one thing for a college coach that is trying to get a recruit, you know, and trying to make everybody happy to sit there and try to play glass half full. But the power rankings in the NFL don't mean anything. And even to your fan base, the power rankings in the NFL don't mean anything. All that matters is whether or not you win or lose. So if you're sitting here today and you're talking and waxing poetically about how Carson Wentz is going to come back and how we shouldn't write off the Indianapolis Colts, or, you know, this was an injury he was dealing with and the surgery was excellent, so Wentz is going to come back and there will be no complications no matter what, even though nobody with a brain can believe the man, because at the end of the day, we know what Wentz's history is. Why? Like, what's the benefit to Frank Reich unless Wentz is just such a baby that you have to almost every time you talk about him say good things?
Or is he convincing himself?
I don't think an NFL coach convinces themselves.
Sounds like in the presser that they mentioned that Reich in general is just an overly optimistic guy.
But then doesn't that set you up for failure with your fans? Like, because your fans are not... See, I wondered this yesterday because we discussed this a couple of years ago where, I mean, they kept moving the ball on the string with Andrew Luck, where it was Andrew Luck had surgery, but he'll be fine and ready to go for the offseason. Then it was Andrew's not going to throw at OTAs. He's out there, but he's not going to throw. He's throwing a Nerf ball, but he's not ready to throw a full football. Then it was training camp, and Andrew was on the PUP list. But, you know, there's time. They're just going to let Andrew get acclimated. And then Andrew's going to practice, and then Andrew didn't practice, and then Andrew misses the whole season, then Andrew retires. And it's like, whoa, that came at you fast. I don't understand how being optimistic helps you. I don't understand where that... Because all it does is give your... I was wondering, going back to the Luck thing that I brought up, if... Like, did Indy have season tickets to sell? Like, is it this idea of, hey, don't come out here and be doom and gloom because we're putting out their season tickets on sale today. Like, that is something I understand. Like, going back to the Predators and the trade deadline of not selling and people saying, well, maybe the owners wanted to make the playoffs so they could get some playoff revenue. And that's a logical explanation that I haven't heard anybody back up, so I don't believe. But if somebody told me that, hey, this is why, look, we all know the Predators should have sold. David knows they should have sold, but he didn't sell because the owners want to make some money. Then, okay, I understand that. And that could be this case with Indianapolis of Indy wanted to sell some tickets, so let's pretend like the season hasn't gone down the toilet. I understand. But as far as like Reich doing an interview tour when he should be coaching in training camp and talking, you know, optimistically about something that doesn't seem to be very optimistic to me, I try to figure out the why behind it.
We have a texter who texted in screenshots of Colts Reddit, and they're already talking about tanking this season in order to get Spencer Rattler with the first overall pick next year, the Oklahoma quarterback.
Is he even that good?
He was not that great this past season, but everyone was all high on Spencer Rattler coming into college. But that's what the conversation in for Indy fans has become. Tanking every game this season in order to get a new quarterback in the draft this year when they just signed a quarterback this past year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think much of Indianapolis' chances to be a good team this year. Could they get Wentz back and make their way into the playoff as a wild card? Maybe. But, I mean, they're going to have some serious competition in their own division for that number one pick. I mean, the Houston Texans are – I think there's a legitimate chance that the Texans go like 1-16 this year.
Who's going to be that one?
The Titans.
No, don't say that.
I say
you
that.
You just went from, I'll run around Broadway in a thong if the Titans don't win the division, to the Texans beating the Titans for their one win of the year.
I say that as somebody who remembers when the Titans didn't make the playoffs because they lost to a tanking Indianapolis team.
Hey, last game of the season. Titans won't be playing anybody. They'll be resting them. Week 18. Texans
week
get
18.
It. Yeah.
Who's gonna be the quarterback for the Texans? It's gonna be Tyrod Taylor, isn't it?
Davis Mills or Tyrod. Ty Goddard, Davis Mills, yeah.
What a freaking dumpster fire. What a mess. Oh my goodness. You know, it's funny. Like when Bill O'Brien was given all this power and made all these stupid moves, everybody's like, man, those are stupid. And now you see just how stupid all that was. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll hit the headlines with Caroline. We'll do that. Stelman and Company. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stelman and Company, both Caroline and I were at practice today. Shane Bowen talking a big game about the defense. We'll touch on that coming up, but it is time now for headlines with Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman & Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
So a few training camp updates. Giants practice ended early today. Did you hear about that?
I did, but I didn't hear the specifics, so please share.
So specifics are there was a team-wide brawl that broke out in the middle of their first padded practice today. So it all started when tight end Evan Engram retaliated after a late hit to running back Corey Clement. Safety Logan Ryan then came out and knocked Evan Engram to the ground. Daniel Jones jumped in the fight, was on top of the dog pile. Teammates said, in the future, we hope that Daniel Jones stays away from any team fights, which, I mean, I think is fair. But I think also to set a precedent that in the future there will be team fights, I think is a totally separate issue. But Giants coach Joe Judge ripped them a new one, screaming expletives at the team, made them run 12 minutes of 100-yard wind sprints and two sets of push-ups, said there will absolutely be no room for this on the team moving forward. So a lot of drama in New Jersey today.
Ian, what do we think? Joe Judge favorite right now as the first coach to get fired this year?
You think so?
I think it's up there. I mean, I think it's... I mean, here's the thing about the Belichick coaching tree.
Uh-huh.
is that nobody has ever had success. Nobody has left the Belichick coaching tree and had success. And people will use Vrabel as an example, but Vrabel didn't actually coach under Belichick. Vrabel played under Belichick, mm-hmm. but he didn't coach under Belichick. But you look at it, and there's Bill O'Brien has been a mess, and Matt Patricia was a mess in Detroit, and Joe Judge sounds like a mess, and Romeo Crennel never worked out. And I think what happens is people want their team to be a certain way. Like, they show up, and they expect it to be the way that they're used to it being. And that if I just act like the way Bill acts, then it will be like the way Bill has built it. And that's just not how it works, right? Like, if I opened a bar in East Nashville and I opened the same kind of bar that I had in Green Hills and I tried to run it the way I ran the bar in Green Hills or the bar I ran on Demumbrian and I try to put it in East Nashville, it's not going to be the same thing. And I think that's what these coaches try to do. And they try to act a certain way. I was thinking about this today in reference to another incident involving Joe Judge, because this isn't even the first incident, the first confrontation Joe Judge has had at camp this year. And camp is like a week old, and Joe Judge has already had a bunch of issues.
Yeah.
So
on the field in practice.
I mean, like, so I think I look at it and I say, okay, you know, these guys are all the same. Like, they really are all the same. And Vrabel's different because Vrabel has not just Belichick in him, but he's got a little Bill Cowher in him because he played for Bill Cowher. He's got a little Urban Meyer in him because he coached for Urban Meyer at Ohio State. And I think the Vrabel lucked out on walking into an organization where all of the star players were established veterans who, for the most part, minded their own business. Casey, surprising to hear Logan Ryan start all of this because Logan was certainly a part of it here. But Casey and Delanie Walker and Kevin Byard and Derrick Henry and Marcus Mariota and later Ryan Tannehill. And so there was really only one guy, Taylor Lewan, that you kind of had to watch out for. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, everybody was just kind of a certain way when Vrabel got here. And I think that may be the difference. But, I mean, I just don't. Joe Judge, you're in that market. And you've got full-on brawls, and you've got a confrontation every week, and you're a my-way-or-the-highway guy, and that does not work in New York. What's next?
So I want your surprise meter on a scale of 1 to 10. How surprised are you at this news? Deshaun Watson did not participate in the Texans' first padded practice today.
1.
Okay, me too, because when I saw that, I thought, duh. So the NFL says there are currently no restrictions on Deshaun Watson, given his legal proceedings surrounding him. Sure. So you may say, okay, why is he out of practice? And some people may say, well, he was on the sideline with a trainer during Monday's practice yesterday, looking into his right leg. He continued to practice afterwards, but Texans head coach David Culley says he's not really going to say whether Deshaun Watson is hurt or not. I personally do not think that this is surrounding an injury. I think the Texans are just saying, hey, look, you don't want to be here. We don't necessarily really want you here. What's the point of you practicing? So I don't think it's an injury thing.
I don't
think
it's the Texans. I think it's him.
You think it's him?
I think Deshaun
Watson. But I don't think they care.
I think Deshaun Watson, well, but if you get him hurt, then you can't trade him. And if you get him hurt, you owe him all the money. So if he gets hurt, you have to IR him, you owe him all the money, even if he gets
right. Suspended. So I don't think they care that Deshaun Watson doesn't want to practice.
No, I think they're in a situation right now. I think Deshaun Watson has to live right now the single most miserable existence for any person making $40 million in a year. Like, this has to be the most miserable existence you could have. The situation he's in, where he's facing all these legal problems, all these criminal problems. He's alienated his entire team. He doesn't want to be there. Nobody else in the league wants to trade for him. He can't practice. He can't play. He can't compete. So he's just there. And that has to be a miserable existence. So maybe, you know, it's a tough spot to be in.
Tough spot to be in. And yesterday I talked about a different quarterback.
Not that he didn't cause any of this, but tough spot to be in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say boo-hoo, sorry to Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I'm not doing
it. Yeah, no. But yesterday I talked about a different quarterback, Sam Darnold. Carolina beat writer for The Athletic said he had his worst day in practice so far yesterday. But even more bad news out of Carolina today. Carolina safety JT Ibe was kicked out of practice today and then subsequently released from the team after a hard-hit injured receiver Keith Kirkwood. Kirkwood had two broken collarbones last year and left practice today in an ambulance after a hard hit. So kind of scary scene out there in Carolina.
Yeah, you'd have to see the video before you can decide whether or not that was the right or wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. The Titans had a special teams player who wasn't very good named Perry Phoenix. And anytime you get one of the old school Titans to talk about Perry Phoenix, it is always with a, oh, Perry Phoenix. And the most memorable thing Perry Phoenix did as a Titan was get in a fight with Deron Jenkins during the last game of the year in a miserable 2001 season over the warm spot on the bench. But Perry Phoenix one time hit Kevin Dyson in practice that ultimately ended Kevin Dyson's career. And every time I hear about that, it's always the bad players that injure the good players. And this seems to be that kind of issue in Carolina. But I'd have to see the hit before I'd look at it and say, okay, they're overreacting. Mm-hmm. But I'd have to see it. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was like, you know, he's trying to go win the Super Bowl on some random day in August.
Right.
Which you can't have in the NFL. Those are headlines with Caroline. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Shane Bowen today talked a big game as far as the defense is concerned. He's not the only one. The defense has been talking a big game. And yet, while I kind of want to believe it, I've been at practice pretty much every day. That's next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
A lot of the defensive players have talked about having a chip on their shoulder with the way last season went. I mean, how much do you, I guess, encourage that without harping on last year too much?
Yeah, I think you got to learn from last year. I do. I think in the offseason we evaluate it and we come back to them with a plan on ways to improve. I think now that we're kind of into 2021, like, it's areas of emphasis for us. Like, it's not about last year, it's about this year. We got to make sure, like, third down, red zone, all the turnovers continue, right? Like, we make sure we emphasize those things. But, like, last year's over. Like, we're a new team, we got a lot of new pieces. Like, half the guys in our defensive room weren't here last year, right? But understanding as a unit that, hey, these are areas we struggled with. Like, we're going to make a big emphasis on this early on. Like, we got to be better here, because if we're better here, it's going to carry over to be better throughout a lot of different areas defensively.
There you go. Shane Bowen, Titans defensive coordinator. Not a popular guy last year with how bad that Titans defense was. He is right. There are a lot of new faces. As of right now, knock on wood, there's a lot of healthy faces. Now, Bud Dupree is not. And that is one that perhaps we will keep looking at. And the one thing I don't like doing, and I know I do this, but is saying if, you know, if Bud Dupree comes back and is healthy and is that game-wrecking pass rusher, that okay, but we have to operate right now like he's not. And I hate saying that, but Bud Dupree is not healthy right now, and Bud Dupree has COVID. So those two things, or is on the COVID list, I should say. Mm-hmm. It's not confirmed that he has it, but he went on the COVID list like a week ago and hasn't come off of it, which makes me think that he probably has COVID. So I'm a little concerned. Caleb Farley. If Caleb Farley gets out there and he's been out there, but he hasn't done anything in 2 days. So let's put that to the side. That having been said, Shane Bowen talked a big game today at practice. You were there. You saw the defense. I want to believe him, because I have seen improvement on defense. And I have seen improvement in a lot of guys. I've seen improvement in Tier Tart and Larrell Murchison on the defensive line. I have seen an improvement when I'm doing the grading. You know, Jayon Brown is out there, and I feel like there's a lot of times I'm like, oh, plus 55, you know, plus one, good play on Jayon Brown. I think he back in the lineup will make a difference. The secondary is entirely new. I love Hooker going into that starting role. Chris Jackson, Breon Borders have looked good, kind of at their backup corner positions. Jack Rabbit Jenkins, I think, is going to be the same as Malcolm Butler. Maybe a little bit better, maybe a little bit worse. But he's going to get burnt, but he's going to make plays. You're going to have to live with the good and the bad. And then, you know, Fulton had a good day yesterday, didn't see him today. You know, they got young guys at corner that are either going to boom or bust. But it can't be worse than it was last year. And so I see that, and I know that it can't be worse than last year, and I see a rotation of bodies that I like. Last year, one thing that drove me nuts was they played Simmons the whole game. They played Jack Crawford and Daquan Jones the whole game. They played Rashawn Evans, which you normally play your middle linebacker the whole game, but they played those guys almost the whole game. They played Harold Landry and Clowney almost the whole game. And I used to look at it and think to myself, don't these guys need rest? Like, I remember when I was a kid, and the Titans had one of the best defenses in the league. And on defensive line, they rotated those babies in and out. Javon Kearse got to the sidelines. Albert Haynesworth took rest. Kevin Carter got a break. And I'm looking at it now, and last year nobody got a break, and I'm thinking, okay, John Simon is a legitimate NFL rotational player. So he can play, and Harold Landry can rest. Rashad Weaver is a fourth-round draft pick. So he should be able to play, and Bud Dupree can rest. Derek Roberson is a bottom-of-the-roster guy, but he can work in your pass rush rotation so somebody can get a rest. Laurel Murchison and Tierre Tart can rotate in so that Jeffrey Simmons and Denico Autry can get a rest. Like, that, I think, is a good sign. I've seen the defense look good at practice at times. I mean, really look good. They do not look like a team that is poised to finish 28th in defense again for the second straight year. And yet, I try not to get too caught up in camp BS. Like, I'm not out there, I'm not reading what somebody is writing at gotitansblog.com. Like, I'm there. So I'm seeing it with my eyes. And I do think the defense is going to be better, but I'm also putting that up against my own personal feeling, like the angel and the devil on the shoulder of someone saying, hey, it's training camp, one day of pads, Julio doesn't practice really ever, AJ only kind of practices, Derrick Henry doesn't practice ever, like, let's not get too caught up in this, knowing that Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins are coming in town week one. So Shane Bowen saying it, Kevin Byard said it last week, and while I want to believe it, and my eyes are telling me it might be possible, I still am a little cautious.
Well, and I think that there's a difference between the Titans defense looking better and the Titans defense being a game changer, the Titans defense being really good. From what I have seen from the Titans defense today when I was out there at practice, I would say it looked decent. It looked decent. There were some good plays out there. I mean, they looked like they had plenty of practice in their footing. They looked confident and comfortable out there. So I'm not willing to say that the Titans defense is completely transformed, but I would say it's on the right track. But I think there was one thing that Rashawn Evans pointed out during his interview today. And that
no, he does talk a good game too.
He does talk some good game, but he said that he emphasized patience to both Caleb Farley and Monty Rice, two rookies on defense. And I do wonder exactly what he means by patience.
Yeah, Rashawn Evans talks a good game. I like Rashawn Evans fine, but he's not a good player. I mean, he's a fine player. He's okay. You know, I don't look at Rashawn Evans as the definition as to whether or not the defense is going to work out. It's not on Rashawn Evans' shoulders. I could spin it to you however you want it to be spun. Mm-hmm. If you want me to spin it like I think this Titans defense is going to be so improved, and a la Jim Schwartz when he took over in 2001 and they were not good that year and they had Deron Jenkins at corner who got the nickname Toast and for a good reason. And then the next year they were one of the meanest defenses in the NFL. Like, I could spin that to you based off of what I've seen at practice. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm not trying to pump anybody's tires. I mean, like, I can legitimately spin that to you because I've seen a lot of good things at practice.
Yeah.
But there is the part of me that is just being cautious and, hey, don't get too carried away, man, with camp. Like, and where is that line? Where is the line between, wow, look at Christian Fulton, look at Amani Hooker. Amani Hooker looks awesome this year. Where is that and Hooker was on the team last year. Like, most of these guys, Christian Fulton was on the team last year. A lot of these guys were on the team last year. Now, Denico Autry wasn't, and Rashad Weaver wasn't, and John Simon wasn't, and Derek Roberson was hurt. But at the same time, like, do those guys make up how bad you were and make you good? And that's where I'm like, yeah, probably not. So it's almost like where sometimes maybe I get a little carried away and I need that other side of me to be like, yeah, let's not get too caught up in this. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about the defense. Like I need more. Like if they go to Tampa Bay and I'm going to Tampa to watch those practices, if they go to Tampa Bay and they shut down Brady and the Bucs, now we're talking. But I still am hesitant to get too excited about what I'm seeing at training camp when what I have seen at training camp has been very good on defense.
I think I would be more quick to make an assumption about the defense if what I saw was really, really bad. Because when you get out on the field and during a game, it's only going to get worse. But what I saw today and what you said, what you've seen the past few days, it's good. You know, it's not anything that I'm willing to write home about and say, hey, the Titans defense is transformed, because I'm not ready to say that.
So there's a big, big contract that has been given away to somebody who deserves it. But I think the issue that I have with it is really what it tells us about the future of a sport we love. How's that for a tease? Good?
It's a good one.
Good. Next.
I like it.
Dominic Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.